a well-trained person that's in charge of 10 barns, if I can spend time as their veterinarian making them understand the concepts of what we're trying to execute, not just here's the things I need you to do, I would much rather have that happen than 10 people that just have a piece of paper that they're following because their boss told them to.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
DietForge.ai, AI-powered feed formulation with non-linear ingredient modeling and real-time collaboration. Finally, modern software for modern nutritionists. The Poultry Science Association is dedicated to advancing poultry science worldwide. Learn more at poultryscience.org. Anatox, partnering with the world's food producers to develop and deliver innovative programs to efficiently produce safer food. Kemin invites you to optimize poultry health and nutrition. Dive in at kemin.com/poultry. Fortiva, creating ingredients for impact to support animal resilience and health. Learn more at fortivaimpact.com.
Well, welcome back, everyone. It's another episode of the Poultry Nutrition Black Belt Podcast. This is a part two episode. So I'm Kelly Walmsley, and I'm joined by Dr. Michelle Crom. Hey, Michelle.
Hey, Kelly. Glad to be back for part two.
I'm glad to have you back. So we ended on talking about, we're still on the same topic of high pathogen avian influenza, but we were kind of talking about that cost on people and just the industry, but more than just the birds and just all the different factors, how it's so complicated on just thinking about how to address this virus and controlling it and just disease in general. But thinking about one of the things that came up offline was that I'd asked you about, because my mind is like, you know, we haven't been talking about high path avian influenza as much, at least in my circles, nutrition, but still, it seems like the hotter topic has been avian metapneumovirus. And like, especially last year, I mean, that was just crazy, came on so many questions, and I guess the last 2 years, maybe even, and I may be a little bit slightly off wrong on the timing, but then now, you know, we swooped in and started vaccinating, and that's something that came really quickly, it seems like. Maybe that's just from, you know, my perspective of seeing it happen, but why is this, why that situation and that, and then we have high path avian influenza, and it's a completely different situation. What's the comparison there?
Yeah, that's an actually really impactful comparison, because I can tell you from where I sit in Minnesota, avian metapneumovirus has been foremost in people's conversations too. Even though we've had high path cases in the last year, it's been the economic impact, the economic devastation caused by AMPV has been, you know, foremost. I think the major difference is that it's not a trade issue. The United States kind of had like a golden halo around it. We were one of the last poultry producing countries to actually have now endemic avian metapneumovirus. So vaccines were readily available overseas, have been for decades in most cases. The biggest challenge in that conversation was actually with Center for Veterinary Biologics and helping them to understand to the degree of which poultry producers were being impacted. I serve on the executive committee for National Turkey Federation, so talking specifically for turkey growers, but knowing that all commodities were being impacted. And really helping CVB connect with vaccine manufacturers and finding pathways in which vaccine could be brought overseas to intervene. And are the vaccines perfect? No. Are they better than nothing? In a lot of cases, they're definitely better than nothing. But the speed is because this was a pure conversation about animal health. Yeah, there were some issues that we had to work through with regards to bringing foreign vaccine into the U.S., but there was no trade implications. And so I think that's why, you know, even if we go back in my time, old lady, I guess, in 2015 as the benchmark of when we first had a few conversations about using vaccine to help control H5 influenza, really haven't moved, right? In 11 years, we have a kind of a straw man of a program that has been drafted by USDA with some expert opinion helping to inform that, but it hasn't been socialized broadly. And so to me, as a production person, like, we're kind of in the same spot. And so if you compare 12 months for avian metapneumovirus vaccine to 11 years for high path influenza, I think it's a great question to ask, like, you know, what are the differences? And to me, that it's largely a conversation around economics, and very specifically, export markets for high path influenza.
Feed formulation software is stuck in the past. Most tools haven't evolved beyond basic least cost optimization. A Diet Forge changes that. It's an AI-powered platform with nonlinear ingredient modeling for enzymes and additives, cost per gain and maximum profit optimization, and real-time collaboration like Google Docs for nutrition. Every recommendation is grounded in world-class research, built for modern nutritionists who need more than legacy desktop software can deliver. Work seamlessly with your team and optimize the way modern operations demand. Try DietForge.ai free today. Feed formulation, finally modernized.
So I know we touched upon other countries vaccinating, like in France and different programs that they have. So, and this was in the previous episode, and talking about that kind of system may not work here in the U.S. or some kind of change needs to happen. Oftentimes we use like those countries, you know, we say, okay, what happens in Europe is coming down our way. And some of the things with like animal welfare and things like that, it's just kind of that trickle effect that come to us. And I mean, I think the first thing that comes to mind for me whenever somebody starts talking about, okay, well, we've got to make these changes. We got to make changes in what we're doing. So my mind always goes into something of, oh, we've obviously got to change our production system because we got to vaccinate. We need to change our production system. And so, but that's not really what you're saying though at the same time, right? I guess, you know, I mean, you had a long history of working in, you know, for integrators. And so I guess kind of give me that your mindset on what that looks like and not just we're changing up things on production systems.
You know, I think one of the challenges when we think about, you know, what would it take for housing systems to look different, for example, or what would it take for complexes to be more geographically diverse, right? And so they wouldn't be so concentrated potentially. Or putting fewer chickens or turkeys in a house. I think the challenge is that you still have to protect those animals. Biosecurity still has to happen. So whether I'm doing biosecurity on 10 barns of 500,000 chickens or, you know, 50 barns of, I'm going to like screw up the math now, of 100,000 chickens. You still have to execute the biosecurity. And when you disperse them more, you have to find people. And I haven't met a single person in any of the commodities that we talk about when we talk about the poultry industry that has excessive labor. So, you know, and to me, like a well-trained person that's in charge of 10 barns, if I can spend time as their veterinarian making them understand the concepts of what we're trying to execute, not just here's the things I need you to do, I would much rather have that happen than 10 people that just have a piece of paper that they're following because their boss told them to. So changing the production systems is not really part of the conversation, in my perspective. I know that there's folks out there that would say, yes, that's absolutely what we need to do. I think from a biosecurity standpoint, producers have done all we can. We're using the same playbook and we're still having issues. And so what's next? And to me, not acknowledging the role vaccine plays in protecting animal health and, oh, by the way, protecting human health is just a miss. It's a miss that, to your point, I hope that we don't pay for as the U.S. because somebody else gets to write the playbook and then we have to adopt or adapt, because I don't think that will be a great space for us to be in.
Well, and you talked about in the previous episode of kind of the outbreak lasting, you know, it's been, this current one has been going on since 2022, right? So, I mean, that to me, then I guess it does lend itself to it's there, it's endemic, like you said. And then, so we need to be thinking about, then it is vaccine the right step? I mean, it is harder, I think, to grasp when something is a little more seasonal or sporadic, but when something is there more persistently, then that does also, you know, I think makes sense and at least deserves some, you know, a seat at the table. So talking about who deserves a seat at the table and stakeholders and what that looks like, you know, where do you think we need to be going?
Yeah, I think one of the conundrums here is that, you know, the commodity group that has the most to lose economically, right, the broiler sector, is also the one that is least impacted. So you have this conundrum in which those that could be most economically impacted, if we were under current circumstances, at least, if we were to start vaccinating, they're the least impacted. So they have the least skin in the game. So, you know, from a broiler perspective, I understand. You know, from a turkey and a layer perspective, it's just not sustainable. It's not sustainable in almost any facet of sustainability you can think about, whether that be economic, environmental, human health, mental health wise, community economic wise. I mean, there's so many things that happen when this virus impacts poultry in these rural areas, not to mention, you know, how the virus continues to demonstrate that it can, like, not very easily, but can infect people. And so having a conversation about whether or not we should vaccinate poultry without including what on the veterinary medicine side of things, we would say without including a One Health approach is just not appropriate anymore. It's not appropriate to not include infectious disease folks from the human health sector because people have gotten infected. And as the virus continues to circulate and be present, that risk of exposure is not going away. So I just think, you know, in a decade ago, it was a very myopic conversation that I think it was relatively appropriate to only have poultry stakeholders at the table. But given what the virus has done and the risks that have changed, having just that same stakeholder group is not appropriate anymore.
So what does success look like in 5 years or 10 years? Or what is, I guess, in your kind of opinion on what would be, you know, ideal situation, what does that look like?
Yeah. You know, I think that we're always advocating as veterinarians and producers to just give us the tools, give us access to the tools, and we can determine whether it's a good fit for our situation or not. So most likely, you know, even 5 to 10 years down the road, hopefully not, broilers are going to be largely still unimpacted. So it's not going to be probably of interest to the broilers. There's probably some sectors in table eggs that probably would opt to not vaccinate because it's not an issue for them. Turkeys, maybe. Turkeys might be a little bit more of a challenge to say, no, we're not going to vaccinate. So the ask is get producers and veterinarians the tool for the toolbox and let them determine whether it's a good fit. From the kind of surveillance that would come with the choice to vaccinate, that surveillance needs to be grounded in science and needs to be a conversation about what are we trying to manage or to mitigate. So to me, we're trying to mitigate the risk of virus circulating unknowingly. Well, we already have surveillance programs based on the secure poultry supply that dictate when those high risk movements of moving animals from place to place, whether it be from farm to farm or farm to processing plant, occur. And so we could use those same models informed by caveats for vaccinated flocks to determine what the surveillance program should be. But we have to decide what the outcome is. Is the outcome to be able to say we don't have like zero risk of undetected virus circulating? Or is our preferred outcome to say it's a minor risk, we're controlling disease, we're not worried about? Because that will kind of inform the model differently. And we haven't really decided what outcome we're actually looking for.
Most companies know AI can help, but the hard part is getting it deployed inside the business. Elevate Agents builds and launches custom AI agents that handle repetitive workflows, reduce manual overhead, and help teams move faster without adding headcount. From identifying the right use cases to deploying agents that actually work in your operations, Elevate turns AI from an idea into execution. Build smarter systems with Elevate Agents. Visit elevateagents.ai.
We haven't even talked about, like, you know, the aspect of, you know, other, I guess, segments of the industry, you know, from a nutritional standpoint, you know, what things could be done. You know, I mean, like we've talked about in different circles of like vitamins and minerals, and that nutrition work and the requirement work hasn't been done in a long time. You know, maybe we've got so all these advancements in, you know, looking at the microbiome of the bird and like genetic engineering. So are there ways that we could then could it also look like maybe not even the vaccination aspect, but it's pulling in some of these other pieces to help manage or mitigate the risk of something like high path avian influenza or the next, you know, disease coming down the road?
I think it is really important to think about all of these things holistically, both from an animal health standpoint, but also from, you know, an economic standpoint for the producer. I think the bad news is that high path influenza is a lethal disease. So no amount of enrichment of a diet is going to really help prevent the birds from becoming infected. And to be honest, the vaccine is not a sterilizing vaccine, as most vaccines aren't, right? So we're not saying, you know, the vaccine is the end all be all. What the vaccine helps to do is that a well-vaccinated bird is going to take more virus to get that bird infected versus a non-vaccinated bird. And if they do become infected, more importantly and more impactfully, they shed less virus. So it's really about, you know, how can we better, given our current construct of poultry production, how can we better protect the complex, or as what we would say in Minnesota, the poultry neighborhood, from the virus? And vaccines are really a critical piece to that puzzle.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, I can't believe we hadn't talked about this yet, but even just what the purpose of the vaccine and what it would do too. I mean, that's another great aspect of, and just a reminder for people too. And it's not a silver bullet, but we need to be, but it is definitely another tool in the toolbox and a really important tool that could fit. So I guess, you know, we've had some great conversation today and over the past two episodes, I guess, now that we're at. Do you have anything else that you want to leave us with, Michelle?
Yeah, you know, the virus is always going to outpace our ability to innovate. We're still using, by and large, documents that were written in the face of the 2014-2015 outbreak, so a decade old. And this is definitely not the same virus. So I just would like people to have an open mind that we can't keep doing the same thing. It might be working for some sectors, but it is definitely not working for other sectors, for other producers in the country. And we need to take a new approach and kind of open up our lens to what those different ideas might be. And I think that includes strategic use of vaccine when it's appropriate.
Yeah. Well, and like you said, there's an article that we were going to be touching upon even more that you're the primary author on related to the U.S. and high path avian influenza. And it's going to be linked here with the podcast. But, you know, I think the article is from April of this year. Correct. Is that right? And yeah. So you said that, a lot of the information in that article is still dated. And that's, it's exhausting to think about that. You've got to be keeping up with things that quickly, but that's also why I'm glad that I'm talking to you today. And I'm sure that people are glad that they're listening. We have that responsibility at least to be a little bit aware of what's going on, but that's why we have, great scientists and people out there, medical professionals, veterinarians, even you veterinarians, you're useful sometimes.
Aww, thanks, Kelly.
but I really appreciate your time, and it's been a joy. And so thanks. And I hope maybe we don't have to talk about this much more, but I'm sure that we'll be probably talking again soon, but it'll be good to get a little more of an update. So thanks so much for your time.
Yes. Thanks, Kelly. I've enjoyed the conversation.
All right. Well, that concludes another episode of the Poultry Nutrition Black Belt podcast. And Michelle, thank you so much. And we'll talk to you again soon.
Take care.
Bye.